Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. As states such as Massachusetts consider whether to raise the age of adult criminal responsibility beyond 18, in Germany, they're debating whether to raise it to 24, meaning that anyone younger than that would be dealt with in the juvenile, not the adult justice system. How Germany handles young people charged with crimes is something that a group from Massachusetts recently witnessed firsthand. A delegation of state lawmakers, law enforcement officials, attorneys and juvenile justice reform activists traveled together to Germany. They watched trials of young people accused of crimes. They toured detention facilities and they talked with the officials and the young people involved in the system there. Many of those who went on the trip say Massachusetts might be able to take some lessons from Germany about this, and they're here in the studio to talk with us. Suffolk County Sheriff Stephen Tompkins is one of them. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Also, Commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Youth Services, Peter Forbes, is with us as well. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
We want to also invite our listeners into this conversation. Should young adults be treated differently in the criminal justice system? Should Massachusetts raise the age of adult criminal responsibility? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet to Radio Boston. So first, I want to start with you. Sheriff, we should talk to you a little bit about the trip, and I want to say the Columbia Justice Lab sponsored this trip. But tell us, what are some of your impressions from going over there and what you learned about Germany's juvenile justice system?
Let me preface that by saying this. I was really encouraged and inspired by the group of people that they put together. It was a collection of law enforcement officials, judges, prosecutors, legislators, social service individuals. And the reason I start with that is because we all had an opportunity to talk about what we'd witnessed, what we'd learned from our respective areas of influence. And so we learned a lot from each other there. Fast forward, one of the things that really stuck out to me is this. In my academy, when I bring officers on, we give them a 12-week academy. Their officers go through a 2-year academy. And I think that's really significant because it really gives the officers an opportunity to understand the social aspect of folk that are incarcerated. And so they're really more like social workers or caseworkers than officers. And I thought that was extraordinary, particularly when you're dealing with young minds.
Right. What does that do to the culture of the whole system when that's the approach, do you think?
I think it's more compassionate, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, where I believe that our system may be a little more strident, maybe a little more punitive, this is a little more compassionate because first and foremost, to me at least, they always remember that they're dealing with human beings and that these human beings will eventually go home. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's very important. So I think their culture is a lot different than ours. Mm-hmm.
But most of the people that we incarcerate go home, too. What about in your facility?
Well, in my facility, because I'm a county sheriff. Right, and so on average, guys are there 12 to 14 months, ladies 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. If you look at the state system, it's a lot different. You have more lifers. You have longer sentences, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Peter, correct me, but I believe in one of the individuals that we spoke to said that the average sentence for murder is 10 years.
In Germany, the average sentence is 10 years.
And so when you talk about the fact that they're going home, they are going to get that second chance.
So this is a rehabilitative approach as opposed to a more punitive
That's
approach.
That's a great way to say it.
Yeah? Yep. Would you agree with that, Peter?
Yeah. I mean, I think the focus, the framework, really, the paradigm was rehabilitation and lower recidivism. What do we need to do from a rehabilitation standpoint to lower the likelihood that this individual is going to commit another crime? And everybody was very clear that there was no retribution in the equation on the youth side, that it was really rehabilitation, lower recidivism, and not retribution. And we heard that channeled by everybody that we talked to across the system. So to me, that really was something that stood out in the process.
Mm. That was the big thing to you.
That was one thing.
Yeah. What was another?
Well, I think, from a practical standpoint, as a person that's a practitioner, the fact that they had really well-developed vocational programming, vocational shops, they had a system where young people that are in there, what they call youth prisons, would get either credit or credentialed in a way that they could take that credential into the community and earn a living wage in an industry. So it was really very thoughtful and very well developed, and focused. The focus on the programming side was far more oriented toward work and placement than it was on traditional academics and education. And that stood out to me.
Right. So I guess I think a lot of folks probably might agree that we could do probably a more compassionate approach here for young people. I think a lot of people would agree with that, and they would probably say, but does that protect public safety well enough? And what does it cost? And how do we know that people who are treated in a more rehabilitative setting aren't recidivating at a higher rate? So did we learn about any of that on that trip? Share a few first.
Yes.
So public safety, recidivism, what do we know about
that? Yeah, I
mean,
and so far as public safety is concerned, they are very aware of the public's need to feel safe and secure, while at the same time, I go back to the fact that people really need to have a second chance at heightening their station in life. And from the folk that we spoke to, not just the practitioners, but the common people that we had the citizens of Germany that we had a chance to talk to, they didn't seem like they felt that they weren't secure. You know, I mean, there's going to be crime everywhere. Here's an interesting thing, though. So they don't have the same kind of gunplay that we have in this country. And so when you talk about security there versus talking about security here, the conversation is totally different. Because of the proliferation of guns. Now, first and foremost, let me say this. I am not in any way, shape, or form saying that guns should be done away with. I am not talking about the Second Amendment. That being the case, though, we do have a lot of gunplay here that they don't. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about feeling safe, it's a lot different. Mm-hmm. At least that was my perception.
And how about cost? Is it more expensive?
You know, truthfully, I don't remember. Do you know what that number?
I'm not sure. We didn't really get a cost center.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But clearly, the way they were staffing their youth facilities, they were staffing it at a higher level than what you would see in a correctional facility in Massachusetts. They had more staff, more clinical staff, more vocational programming. So I would guess it's more expensive. I think the exciting thing for Massachusetts, I think, is really to figure out what's the most effective way. We're spending a lot of public money. So how can we spend the public money in a way that gets us the best possible outcome? And Germany is, you know, it's. I think it was instructive to look at what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. So let me say this to you, though, Deb. So in my facility, it costs about $55,000 annually to incarcerate. Yes, ma'am. To incarcerate one individual, I have over 1,600 on any given day. And you'll hear some of our legislators and our governor talk about the fact that the count, the body count, is going down. The word that they leave out, though, is they leave out the convicted body count is going down, juxtaposed to the pre-trial body count, which is not going down, and in some cases is going up. And so it's nice to say that the numbers are going down, but let's look at who's in jail. First of all, you have a lot of pre-trial folk, but then you also have a lot of people that are suffering from either substance abuse or mental health issues. And so the cost to take care of those individuals has skyrocketed. And so I understand the discussion about the need to take from Peter to pay Paul, but I don't see how that happens. We need to identify new revenue streams, frankly, to take care of folk before they fall into the criminal justice system. It was my contention that a lot of people that are with me shouldn't be. They should have gone into a diversionary program, or they should be in a mental health or substance abuse bed outside of a correction facility.
Peter Forbes, you know, when we talk about increasing the number of people who potentially would go into the juvenile system, do we have the capacity to deal with that? If I know the initial proposal before Massachusetts about raising the age of adult criminal responsibility was up to 19. That didn't make it in the criminal justice reform bill. There are some folks who say that they may increase it to 21. Does our system have the capacity to handle the folks who are now incarcerated between the ages of 18 and 21? Would the juvenile system be able to take them in?
No, I mean, I think there would be a cost factor and a programming factor, because that would be a shift from the adult system to the juvenile justice system, and that's a policy issue that is undecided, is out there. But if you were to infuse thousands of 18 to 21-year-olds into the Department of Youth Services, clearly there would be a cost, because it costs more to have a young person in a secure bed in a youth service facility in Massachusetts than it does to have them on the adult side. the cost, you know, related to education, clinical, and the way we staff our programs, it's just a more expensive model.
What's the average cost right now, and how many young people in the system, do you know?
How many young people average daily right now that are in custody? About 800, I believe, is the number. And the cost for a long-term secure treatment bed for 365 days is in the range of about $125,000.
Mm-hmm. Is that an average cost for an average youth locked up? Or when you say secure treatment, is that any kind of specialty treatment, or $125 is sort of the average cost for a young person who would be in a detention facility?
That's one type of program that we run, and that's a cost that I don't have the math in front of me, but that's kind of a ballpark cost on average for somebody that's in a long-term program.
So that's more than double the cost. So that would be more expensive. It would definitely be more expensive. What would we get back? Any ideas in terms of the recidivism rate if Massachusetts were to adopt something more like a German model? Do we know what the recidivism rate is in Germany? You know, people will be saying, is it worth my investment?
Right.
What is it?
I don't have all that in front of me. They promoted that they incarcerate fewer people and that they have a lower recidivism rate than what we have here in Massachusetts, I believe by about half, but I'm not sure of the exact math.
And our recidivism rate is about 46%, you know. And so, but what I would say to answer that question is that if you take that young mind, we all understand that the brain doesn't fully mature until you're 25 or 26. If you can get to that youngster and to work with them, you have a better chance of interrupting that cycle of criminality, which would then interrupt that cycle of recidivism. And so I think it's a good, healthy approach. Now, some of my fellow sheriffs may not agree with me on that, but I do believe that we should incrementally raise the age. It shouldn't be in one fell swoop, given what Peter said, to have all these people show up overnight wouldn't be good. But every 2 years, every 3 years, 5 years, you up it 1 year, I think it's a good thing.
Hmm. Peter, do you think it's a good idea to raise the
age? I'm really not in a position to take a hard stand on that, so I'm going to defer that question.
Okay. Well, listeners, you can weigh in if you'd like. We want to hear from you. Should Massachusetts raise the age of adult criminal responsibility beyond 18? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. I do want to bring in another perspective from someone who does not agree with you, Sheriff, as you mentioned, that not everyone does, but this is not another sheriff. This is Lincoln Police Chief Kevin Kennedy. Chief Kennedy, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So why not raise the age?
We look at the current, you know, proposal, you know, raising it to 21, I think as a law enforcement community, we're currently opposed. I think there's an awful lot of unanswered questions to that. But that being said, I think the police community stands, you know, united in collaborating with the criminal justice system and our community partners in finding innovative ways to decrease recidivism rates among our young people. I think when you look at the criminal justice reform bill that was recently passed, I think as Sheriff Thompson recently mentioned about, you know, earlier intervention, and I think it's really important to understand that for the first time, diversion and restorative justice practices will be available across the Commonwealth. And just as it, in speaking as it relates to Middlesex County, diversion and restorative justice programs have been in place for a number of years, and in my opinion, have been very successful in helping young adults correct the root cause of their behavior. And when you look at just raising the age to 21, there is really no direct correlation that raising the age alone is going to reduce recidivism. You know, it really comes down to individualized programs and treatment that's going to correct the offender's root cause while putting systems in place to support that young adult or juvenile. And when you look at the whole adolescent brain development, I think the system, you have to break the system, when I say the criminal justice system, into three specific groups, that being the juveniles, obviously, who are under 18, and the young adults that are between the ages of 18 and 24, and then over 24. And when you look at just raising the age to 21, you're still not addressing the concerns of the 21 to 24 population. Mm-hmm. And what the Criminal Justice Reform Bill has done, it allows the Department of Corrections and the sheriffs to open up these young adult correctional units. And that is just what has taken place in Middlesex County, where Sheriff Katusian, who has recently opened in the past 3 months. And again, that addresses that it's the young adult population, 18 to 24, which was created in partnership with the Vera Institute.
Right.
And,
but,
and
right.
the Vera Institute actually looked at Germany's the Germany prison system as a model to create this unit. Oh,
okay, but I'm just wondering, you know, the folks who say that we should increase the age, they say, as you heard probably just in this program, that sometimes putting younger people, even those, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds in with older people who've been accused of crimes can have a detriment. And I'm paraphrasing what you've told me, particularly you, Sheriff, so if you want to chime in here and correct me, feel free. But, I mean, that could actually have a long-term detrimental effect on that young person and inhibit that person's ability to really change their life and turn it around when they're at an age where they might be able to do so. So why not raise the age here? Are you just saying that the unilateral approach to doing it is what's the problem?
I think it should be, the system should be in place where you're creating these young adult units, and I agree they should be separated from the older inmates and things of that nature. I completely agree. But I think they're more similarly aligned between 18 and 24, you know, are better off to be placed together and treated similarly and provide that individualized services and treatment and so forth, rather than putting them all in, you know, 18, you know, 21-year-olds with 14-year-olds. Mm. I think that's an issue that I'm sure Commissioner Forbes could address.
Mm-hmm. But also you're also telling those young adults that they have been involved in the criminal justice system. It's not diversion, and it does have long-lasting effects for those people to have something on their criminal record.
Oh, no, I agree. And I think, you know, for the first time, we're very much in favor of diversion restorative justice programs. And I think, you know, until the passage of this bill, these programs have not been available, you know, to all the youth and young adults in the system.
So sure.
This is the first time that it's going to be available.
Mm-hmm. So I want to agree with the chief on two points. One, I totally agree that we should have some diversionary programs prior to kids falling into the criminal mm-hmm. justice system. I think that's the best way to go. Two, like Sheriff Katusian, we are about to open up an 18 to 25-year-old unit ourselves, and we're going to model it after a program that we went down to visit in Connecticut called the TRUE program in Cheshire, Connecticut, where they have about 45 youngsters or young men in a cell, in a unit rather, with about 8 to 10 lifers. Guys that will never get out. And they really engage in the restorative justice approach, the healing circles. And in that unit, they have rival gangs, which is kind of something that we really don't want to do here. They have rival gangs there. There are no fights. There are no disruptions. Mm. And the recidivism rate for the gentleman leaving that unit is minuscule. And so when you look at an innovative approach to this, I think it's a healthy thing. Also, I just want to reference the criminal justice bill, which for the most part, I agree with the chief. I think it's a pretty darn good bill. What it does not do, though, is they do not come forth with enough money for aftercare. So what happens to right. these individuals once they leave? If you don't have enough money on the street for the social service agencies to then put their arms around them, chances are that they may recidivate. And so as they tweak this bill, which is what I hope they do as it goes forward, they put more money into it. I think they put in the Commonwealth, we put $3 million in. There are some states that have put over $75, $80, $90 million into the aftercare component.
Okay, so the reentry and the aftercare
Absolutely.
Is just as important. We can't do
Absolutely.
That. I want you to just stand by for a second, and I want to say goodbye to Lincoln Chief Kevin Kennedy. Chief, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I want to go to one of our listeners now who wants to weigh in on this, and I'm reminding all listeners, if you do have a comment about this, about raising the age of adult criminal responsibility in Massachusetts beyond 18, our number is 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Larry is calling from Auburndale. Larry, you're on the air.
Debbie, you'll recognize my voice.
I do.
My question to your guests is that, and you alluded to it in the early remarks of your two guests, that the cost here may be quite significant by comparing Germany to Suffolk or Middlesex County. I wondered, my question to your guests is, the legislators that accompanied you, did they comprehend as well as you do, what you were observing. in my district, I'm represented by two lightweights that would not understand the conversation that you are having with Ms. Becker.
Okay. So lawmakers, do lawmakers understand all of the policy ramifications of what's going on here in terms of criminal justice? Is that the main question?
That's the question. Yeah.
Okay. So, Sheriff, what would you say to Larry?
Larry, I would absolutely say that they did. We had Representative Kahn. We had Dan Hunt. We had Representative Fiola. And a number of these folks actually sit on the public safety and the judiciary committees. Mm-hmm. And so they understand. But interesting, that question is interesting insofar as this is concerned. When I first was appointed sheriff back in 2013, it was around budget season. And I went into the State House to talk about our budget. And the representatives sitting across from me just had that deer in the headlights look in their eyes. They had no idea what I was talking about. And I asked them, I said, how many of you have actually visited my facility? At that time, not one. Not one had ever been in. So they have jurisdiction over my dollars, but they don't know what my dollars are doing. And then we invited them in. And once they came in and had an opportunity to talk to our practitioners, to talk to some of the inmates, the next year, the budgetary difference, it was a little bit better. It wasn't as much as we'd like, but it was a little bit better because they had a better understanding. So I would say that the legislators on this trip got it. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I mean, there was a range of experience with the legislative group that came, but they were very impressive as far as their grasp and their interest. And I think the purpose of the trip was for all of us to learn a little more about the business. So the fact that they took the time to go for a week and spend that amount of time like on the bus, in the facilities, I mean, it was a long trip, and I was very impressed by the legislative group.
And I'll go back to my first comment. The fact that we did have prosecutors and defense attorneys and sheriffs and police chiefs, Brian Kies was on the trip, that gave us an opportunity to talk to legislators about what they'd just seen or what they just heard, and they had a chance to talk to us about what they'd just seen and heard.
Right.
So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it sounds like that would have been a real, you know, one of the big takeaways from that, really, was being able to spend that much time together sharing ideas, right?
We did. We actually did a bus ride from northern Germany back into Berlin for about three and a half hours and used that to debrief. And everybody on the bus spoke, and it was a very novel. It was an interactive approach, and it was the most productive bus trip I ever was on.
Huh.
But it was all about learning.
It's kind of sad that you had to go to Germany for that, but that's okay.
Yeah,
it's not
a little expensive. Yeah.
A little expensive, but that's
but
okay.
Deb, can I make a point about
sure.
this trip also? Mm. So another takeaway. So in their systems and their jails, they do not have windows on the doors of the cells. So an officer cannot look inside. They don't have cameras in the halls like we do, okay? And it goes back to, interestingly enough, the Holocaust. And what was explained to us is, after the Holocaust, there was a privacy clause that was introduced and incorporated into their constitution that said that every citizen has to be afforded a certain level of privacy. That is something that we would never, I can't ever see that happening in the States, where we would not have a way to look into the cell to see if that individual is okay or if something is going wrong. I found that extraordinary.
Yeah.
But it works for them. Mm. I don't think it would work here.
No, why?
Because our culture is different. Our system is not built on that. Our system is built on knowing exactly what's going on within those cells. My mandate is care, custody, and control. If I can't see what's going on, I'm losing that. And that is just not something that I would be open to.
Commissioner Forbes, your office is part of this task force looking at the raising of the juvenile age. I know you don't want to make a commitment about where you stand on it, but what are some of the things you're looking at to even make that determination?
Clearly, when you get to, right now, we actually have a group of young people that are 18, 19, and 20 under the Youthful Offender Act that passed in 1996. So we have about 140 young people that are kind of in that age group. And I think that, you know, our concern or from a planning standpoint would be, what's the investment in VOC and employment training and job placement in the community? Because when you get from 17 to 18 to 19, things start to shift. Priorities shift from education to employment. And I think that the older group requires more resources and more strategic planning around things that they need. 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, they need their driver's license. They need a safe place to live. A lot of them are becoming parents. So the whole social agenda starts to change as you're working with that older group. And so as our participation in that task force will really be about, I think, informing people about what the programmatic considerations are for success. Because that's really what I think Massachusetts wants to land in, a place where we wind up having better outcomes.
Right. We should say Connecticut's doing this as well. And you mentioned the facility in Connecticut, Sheriff. I'm wondering, you know, is there a collaboration at all? I know Connecticut's looking at raising the age to 21, too. So I'm assuming that everybody's looking at sort of the same issues here. Is that something that you're looking at jointly? And is this sort of a trend of changing the way we deal with young people charged with crimes? You're shaking your head, Sheriff.
Yeah, I believe it is a trend, not just in the way we deal with young people, but the way we deal with people that we're going to send away to pay a debt to society. And so because of the cost, number one, and because in this country we incarcerate far too many of our citizens, a lot of which are black and brown, we can't do that any longer. I just don't think we can't afford it. And I think we're destroying not only that individual, I'm not going to say we are, but that individual's life, their family, and their community is going to be impacted negatively because they're away. But if I might, Deb, I'd like to just make one other point about what Peter just mentioned. On average, my population has a fifth or sixth grade math and literacy proficiency level. Mm. So these aren't individuals that are going to necessarily go on to college. So in 2005, my predecessor allowed me to look at our academic schematic and put a heavy emphasis on vocational education. So we teach them landscaping, custodial maintenance, painting, printing, so on and so forth. And then we talk to employers about the fact that, yes, these individuals have been away, but they didn't just sit on their thumbs. They actually learned a skill. And we've been pretty fortunate to get a good percentage of those folks hired. Here's the problem. A lot of them have never been on a professional job site. And so if they make it to that 6 month, they generally keep the job. Mm. But a lot of them hadn't. And so what we found is we had to actually create a program called attitude adjustment. So we not only had to teach them the skill, but then we had to teach them how to comport themselves professionally so that if they did get a job, that they were on time, that their slacks were pulled up. If they had a supervisor, I'm serious here. If they had a supervisor that may have spoken to them in a way that they didn't like, you just can't just go off and show anger because you could lose that job, you see. So I think that we are, as a country, looking at ways to incarcerate fewer people.
Right. You sure you're a sheriff? You don't sound like a sheriff.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, okay. This is Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Also, Peter Forbes, Commissioner of the State Department of Youth Services. Commissioner, thanks for joining us in studio.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, we'll be talking sports with only a games Bill Littlefield. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.